This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Current community affairs.
Connecting.
Uplifting.
Representing.
Informing.
Celebrating.
Empowering.
Sharing your passions.
You are on the line with Dean Beck.
Well, with the Midsummer Festival over, it's clearly time to speak to Luke Taylor from the Sustainable Living Festival. We're a little bit late off the mark this year. I do apologise.
That's all right. Well, I mean, the great thing, of course, is the festival goes for 3 weeks, so it doesn't matter about the big weekend, obviously, that just passed this weekend. But there's a whole range of events that are still happening right up to the 28th of February.
Now, this year, there's the Transitions Film Festival. I just want to get this cleared up because your program has got a film festival on one side and your Sustainable Living Festival on the other. What's the relationship there and how that...
Well, the Transition Film Festival grew out of the Sustainable Living Festival about 4 years ago. The history of it is that it used to be, we used to have a film program in the festival, and it became so big that it became its own festival.
Well, there you
go. And now it runs an annual program, actually nationally. So the Transition Film Festival in Sydney, Darwin, Brisbane, right around the country. Look, it's a fantastic chance to really get out there and see some of the best environmental films that are currently being screened right across the world. And it all kicks off tonight. Tonight is the first film, Catching the Sun, which is a fantastic film. And the filmmaker is here from the US, Shalini, who did a fantastic forum, pre-forum at the big weekend just gone on Sunday. She's in town raring to go for the Australian premiere of this fantastic film that you must come down and see tonight at Nova, that kicks off the 3 week program of the Transition Film Festival.
The strength of your program just gets better and better each and every year. And it's got something for everybody, from kids right through to, I just saw, women and bike maintenance.
That's right. I think you picked that one up last time, at the time as well.
Well, it was so popular, it's back again.
I think that's really it. I mean, obviously, that's how we try to design the program, is that there's something, you know, for everybody, whether it's in the transport, you know, bike riding, right through to sustainable food and agriculture, which is a massive theme. We just had the great local lunch on the weekend on Sunday, which was attended by over 200 of Melbourne foodies and local growers. Look out for that one for next year, because it's pardon the pun, but it's a growing event, that one.
Now, this all comes back on the Paris Climate Change Summit. Where are we at landscape-wise, locally and internationally?
Yeah, well,
what's your take on it all?
Yeah, the thing about Paris was, if you take the good parts first and then work into the not-so-good parts, but the good parts was that we actually got an agreement this year, an international agreement, and we all were so bitterly disappointed after the last international negotiations, and that really put such a downer on things. This year, you can say this time around that we have got an agreement. The not so good part is that the agreement actually doesn't add up. There is this so-called commitment to 1.5 degree cap, and yet the measures which are being put forward at the international negotiations, if you added them up, you would get to something more like 3.5, 4 degrees of warming. So there's this big disparity between the targets that were agreed to on one hand of saying limiting to no more than 1.5 degrees, and then so as it's the aspirational goal, but the actual policies that are being put forward by the international community and what they actually add up to, which is really, for the vast majority of people and life on the planet, not compatible with living on the planet. Of a 3.5 degree of warming is just simply not compatible for with the vast array of life on the planet. So that's a big problem that we've got to face.
It sure is. And what's it going to take for us to internationally and collectively just get it and get on with it?
Well, I think part of it is about our own movement really calling this out.
Right.
And I think we're a little bit slow off the mark in some respects to do that. I think that we need to. We had a debate in the festival this year, and we have an annual great debate, and the debate theme was, do we accept strategic incremental change, or do we demand the whole hog? And it really is this very important strategic question that the environment movement and the climate movement need to ask itself is, do we go out there and really tell it like it is and really call out this disparity and start demanding what it would take to actually get to a 1.5 degree warming or under. I mean, there are a lot of people that are saying even 1.5 degrees is too warm. So I think it's really about us coming to terms with that we need to be, in a sense, demanding the whole hog. I mean, there will always be incrementalism in some form or another, but we need to make sure that if we're doing things in steps, that we're doing them at the scale and the speed that we need to actually arrive at the destination that we want. And we have a little bit of a tendency, I think, as a movement and generally is saying, well, you know, it's sort of the process that's important. It's not so much the destination. And I hear that about sustainability quite often. You know, it's not the destination that's important. It's the process. It's the journey. Well, I believe that the destination is really important, particularly when the stakes are so high with climate change.
It's kind of challenging to see how we're going to do that whilst we're focusing on, you know, China and its reclaiming of land in the middle of nowhere and the potential war that we're going to have with them maybe one day, and blowing up the Middle East in the other. I mean, it's like if all that energy went into fixing climate change, we'd probably be there.
That's right. And I mean, I think there's no doubt that there are going to be, while we're trying to address the climate issue, there are going to be other conflicts, and there are going to be other problems that we're going to be dealing with along the way. We're also
we've all got issues.
There's also going to be, you know, births, deaths, and marriages while we're doing the work that we need to. And you know, I know that people are sort of loath to you know, connect the two. But if you look at some of the last times in human history where we've taken on really big things, and if you look at, say, the Second World War, for instance, where huge amounts of people were mobilised. Now that was for a more destructive ends in many cases,
but it was also a collective response.
It was a collective response, yeah. And it was massive.
Yeah.
And it involved government, involved citizens, and
but it was
industry.
All over in a couple of years. You know, these wars in the Middle East have gone on for decades almost.
Well, that's right. I mean, and the things that you can take out of the mobilisation, the wartime mobilisation stuff, I think are quite interesting. And you look at, you know, that economies were transformed in the matter of 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so the American economy went through a transformation in 12 months. So did the Japanese economy. Now, when people start to tell you, you can't just...
It's a slow-moving thing.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And then you look at the kind of transformations that happened in the war analogies. But then you look at things like the technological revolution, for example, or the Asian economies and the transformation that, that they've had. I mean, there is a huge amount of human history that we can draw on to say you can get large-scale change, and you can also do it in very short spaces of time when you've got sufficient amount of will. And at the moment, we don't have the citizens' will, and we don't obviously then have the political will. And it's the job, I think, of the movement is we've got to obviously build that that will, that that real commitment to the big change.
So part of that is about leadership, but part of it is about groundswell as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I think groundswell is a fantastic word, and it's we're thinking at next year's festival theme actually could be something around groundswell.
I'll give it to you for nothing. There you go.
Yeah, we're going to use that now. We're going to use that here, created here, right here at Joy FM,
because it is. That would then inspire leaders to step up to the plate.
Well, that's right. That is exactly – we've got to give the biggest kick in the butt to our political leaders. And, you know, obviously there are groups that are trying to do that already. And, you know, here I am saying, oh, well, we need to – basically we need to do more of it and quicker. And, you know, and everybody's really trying to work that out at the moment, how we do that.
We're speaking with Luke Taylor, Festival Director of the Sustainable Living Festival. We're in the middle of it. We'll come back and have a look at the program right after this.
Now giving you more Dean Bank than any other radio station. Joy 94.9.
You are on the line with Dean Beck.
We are taking a look at the 2016 Sustainable Living Festival. It's the 17th annual festival. I can't believe Luke Taylor has managed to hang in there for so long. Now, we will dive headfirst into the program. You've got some pretty big keynote speakers and stuff coming out. Let's have a look at some of those major big talk fests.
Yeah, well, just before we get into that, I was quite keen to point out is some of the listeners might remember the New Joneses project, which has been around for a couple of years, but this year we've extended that program over 3 weeks. And this is a pop-up sustainable house right in the middle of the city at City Square.
The one that Ding Dong does?
Ding Dong.
Denise?
She did last year, Yeah, she was involved in that last year. She was living in the house. So people are actually living in this pop-up sustainable house over the course of the 3 weeks. Various different people from around Melbourne have, you know, popped in and stayed the night and reported back about how fantastic it was to live in a sustainable home. So the house is actually open. You can come down and see it at City Square, and it's all fitted out with the latest and greatest in sustainable home wares and products, and it's a great chance to start to get the feel of what it, you know, can look like, feel like, to live in a sustainable home. So get down to the City Square. Still open for another couple of weeks before the finish of the festival on the 28th.
Now, our TV screens are full of, well, on the ABC anyway, shows that are incorporating sustainable elements into houses. And this Tesla battery is sort of now on the tip of everyone's tongue. How soon till those sorts of things are kind of standard, or because they're very expensive at the moment? That sort of stuff.
Look, it is here in Australia, but the prices are coming down. Right. I mean, this is the same. You look at the, you know, renewable energy and the solar cost. I mean, they're now getting so competitive that, you know, we're starting to see, you know, that shift happen. I mean, here in Australia, we just, you know, we're always in a bit of catch up with the rest of the world. This stuff is happening, you know, in the States, you know, right across Europe. You know, it's been happening for years.
I mean, triple glazing fundraising is lovely, but can you afford it?
Well, again, you know, it's it's the savings as well that you've got to, you know, you've got to factor in. You know, we got to remember that we spend money on things that we like all the time. You know, and
we've got to, I guess, think a little longer term rather than, you know, this is the house I built for 10 years.
That's right.
This is the house I build that will last 100 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the cost is coming down and you're saving money when you're investing in these things. Those two things coupled together, you know, in terms of affordability, it's now becoming, as you just said before, you know, things that we started showcasing in the festivals, you know, 17 years ago. And you know, are now just the norm in general building practices, and we're just seeing that all the time. The shifts are occurring more and more and more. And yes, like anything, it's not just in the sustainability industry, so to speak. When you start off, sometimes when the market is small, things are more expensive. But this is, again, it's a growing area, and the prices of these products and services are coming down every year.
Now, there's a bit of the touchy-feely going on in this year's festival. There's the Peace Revolution International Tour. There's also this empathy guru that's coming out. I happen to know that there is a private company that has paid $34,000 to spend half a day with him. And I've got him for a whole hour. And I'm looking forward to recording that interview, and I haven't paid a cent. So
bargain. Total bargain.
Bargain for me and my listeners. But what's so important about empathy in sustainable living?
Well, I think the empathy is important because it's sort of a bit of a starting point. I mean, when we look at I think we've discussed this before in previous years, Dean. I mean, the fact is the word sustainability doesn't mean anything unless you qualify what it is that you're wanting to sustain. You know, I mean, the word sustainability is used on economic reports every night on the news, you know, a sustainable economy. So you've got to put something after the word that you care about, that you want to sustain. So what are we empathetic about? What do we care about? What do we value? What is it that we want to sustain? And for the vast majority of people on the planet, I think when it gets down to it, even if we're not using the word sustainable or sustainability, I think what we really care about is people, you know, and whether that's, you know, ourselves or our immediate family or our immediate community. There's that strong social awareness and empathy to people around us.
I guess it's connectedness, and it's the connectedness of people that is only going to fix this issue globally.
That's right. Mm. I mean, you know, when you were talking about before in terms of the climate issue. I mean, the climate issue has got so so much into a crisis situation. I mean, it is a global emergency that we're facing at the moment, and it's no longer just an environmental problem. This is a social problem, and we're seeing it with climate refugees now all around the world. So we can care about the environment, and obviously people that are involved, and our organisation is founded on that basis because we strongly believe that, you know, that without a healthy environment, obviously you can't have, you know, healthy communities. It's critical that I think the empathy, we work out the empathy stuff, because we need to define what it is that we care about. Then we can say, okay, well, these are the things, if it's people and nature or ecological and social sustainability, and those that tend to be, when you crunch it all down, you know, people care about people themselves, other people, and the environment around them. So if you crunch it down to that, then you can say, okay, that's what we want to sustain: healthy communities, healthy environment. And then you can say, okay, well, how do we go about creating a society that does that? And that's what the festival is all about.
One of the beautiful things of, I guess, the response to all of this is the emergence of hand made, crafted things that come from individuals, and this sort of exchange for and respect for the beauty of things that are handmade, not mass produced. There's a great little TV series on ABC that was about the rise of sort of craft and you know, globally, actually. And you've got elements of that right through your program.
Yeah, there's a really big community that in Melbourne that's in this, and you know, the handmade in Melbourne and the craft markets that, you know, are spread, you know, right across the city. And
some great talent.
Absolutely, and I think you're part of that, aren't you, Dan?
I still do my blinging and all of that. Yeah.
So
I love it. It's therapy.
So I, to be honest, I don't think that we have enough of that in the program, and this is right. a call out to.
I'm going to have to put a workshop together for you, aren't
definitely,
I?
Yeah. Definitely. Right. And you know, it's a call out, you know, really just beyond even just that theme, is that we want more people involved with this festival. I mean, this now is our fifth year in expanding the festival out to a 3-week program. Next year, we're going out there and we're saying that that next year, the 2017 festival, is going to be the biggest gathering of environmental folk in the whole world.
Wow.
That's what we're aiming for. It's 2017 is shaping up to be, it's the big push. It's going to be the biggest festival.
It's the groundswell.
It's the groundswell.
I think we're onto something.
Exactly.
Hey, we've got better hit a couple of marks because we've only got a few minutes left. You've got an event out in the burbs.
Yeah. This is part of this you know, growing program that we've got. The city of Geelong had a huge component in the festival program last year. The city of greater city of Dandenong has really stepped up this year. They've got a big sustainability festival which kicks off on Sunday, the 21st of February. It starts at 10 a.m., runs through to 3 o'clock. That's at the Dandenong Market. So, you know, this is about changing, again, how people view the festival. I mean, for a long time, people have viewed the festival as that thing that happens at Federation Square and down in Burong Ma for 3 days. The changing shape of the festival is communities right across Victoria, right across Melbourne, are getting active and putting on their own programs. And the city of Greater Dandenong has really stepped up this year. And so people, you know, may love to get on down to see that event.
And there's a reworked version of Thelma and Louise that you want to highlight, which I love. It sounds great.
Absolutely. The Two Raging Grannies, again, part of the Transition Film Festival, which kicks off tonight at Cinema Nova at 7 o'clock, so the Catching the Sun premiere. But the other event that I'll just point out, mainly because I'm presenting it on Friday night, this is my festival director's pick, this one.
Okay.
It's called Two Raging Grannies, and it's the story of, as you said, the Thelma and Louise, the two 80-odd-year-old women who have decided to become very active in the environment movement, and they set about it. So it's a road movie, and they set about.
Yeah, but hang on, it's a road movie on scooters, on electric scooters,
They're really out to set about finding answers to the big economic questions of economic growth. And the effect that has on the environment and communities around the world. So they're raging, they're fired up, and they're on scooters, and they're out to get you.
Oh, I reckon it's an amazing story. Luke Taylor, thank you very much for joining us on the line today. It's a fantastic program yet again. The Sustainable Living Festival goes through to the 28th of February. And if you haven't got a copy of the program, you can pick one up here from Level 9, 225 Bourke Street, or check it out at SLF, Sustainable Living Festival, slf.org.au. Thank you, Luke Taylor.
Thank you.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.